Hello, and welcome to the 7th episode of 80 Game Club, the monthly video game club podcast where we choose a game from the past to play and talk about in depth. I am your host, Andrew, and joining me today is my best friend and co-host, the power that is yet unknown, David.
Hello.
And at the top of the show, I would like to mention that 80 Game Club has a Facebook page. You can find it at facebook.com/80gameclub. There you can keep up to date with us throughout the month and participate in the conversation by leaving comments. And so, like this month, we posted that we would be posting a little bit late because of just schedule conflicts.
Yeah, it's all my fault.
It is. The game for this month, the last month, was The World Ends With You for the DS. Came out in 2008 for those of us in America. And there's also an iOS version, but I don't know too much about that. So, David, you were the one who suggested we play this game. How about you give us reasons why?
Well, I've known that it was really, you know, popular and beloved, and Neku, the main character, has been your avatar. Yes. On Steam since forever, and that's my main familiarity with it, to the point where if I'm on a website and I see someone with a Neku avatar, like, talking on a post or something, I get really confused for a moment and wonder why you're there.
I had previously used Sora, but after playing The World Ends With You, Neku was just, like, his avatar was so perfect, like, just in proportion and color, and I was just like, yes, that's it, and I've never felt like changing it after that point. But yeah, I played the game when it came out in 2008, and I remember loving it at the time. It was basically a spiritual sequel / side game to one of my favorites ever of Kingdom Hearts. It isn't, at least at the time, it wasn't actually related, but yeah, I had absolutely loved it at the time, and I still do in many ways. And I had brought up that, this was going to be our first, like, truly standalone game, but then you pointed out
that I'm totally counting Kingdom Hearts because, for one thing, that's, I don't remember, you know, who, but the designer or artist or someone is clearly the same as, Kingdom Hearts.
Tetsuya Nomura.
That's right. And, also, several of the characters appeared in one of the worlds in Kingdom Hearts 3DS, Dream yep. Drop Distance.
I think it was Traverse Town, like yeah. One of the first towns.
Yeah, worlds. So they didn't get their own world, but they did show up in the good old Traverse Town.
Yeah, and I've heard rumors that people think Shibuya is going to be a place in Kingdom Hearts 3, so they are definitely linked now, but that's only been pretty recently. But yeah, like, that was one of the things. It was developed by Tetsuya Nomura, or at least he was one of the leads, and he had a lot of the Kingdom Hearts, like, development team also participated with the development of this game. And you can really tell there's a lot of Tetsuya Nomura in this game, just from how the characters are designed, the mm-hmm. kind of the overall story. And, oh, the last thing was, I remember him making a big deal about he wanted to make a game that was all, the title was just all numbers. And that was his mm-hmm. original plan for The World Ends With You. But someone in Square Enix said, no, you're not going to do that for a standalone IP. So that's where Kingdom Hearts 358 divided by whatever. That's where that title came from. Because Tetsuya Nomura at that time, working on the DS, really wanted a game that was just like the title was numbers. And you can really see how that could have happened with this one.
Yeah.
But
I guess now we know where the character of Sho Minamimoto came from.
Oh man, yes, that probably is a pretty good reference that I never even thought of. A correlation that I never even thought of.
Well, that's because you're just Zeta slow.
Yes. So yeah, I was a huge fan of Kingdom Hearts. You have seen me fanboy about the style, and I'm sure I've brought up the music and stuff like Shibuya before.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And that is definitely one of the things about this game that I liked the most, even replaying it. The setting of Shibuya is still very unique as far as games. Just in general, JRPGs are usually on the fantasy side of things. So to see a game like this where it takes place in a real world setting was just really unique and fun, and they really used the whole like fashion centric side of Shibuya well, in that there's like so much clothing and so many shops all around, and the Scramble was a good like location to start at, but from there like it was a good like maze as far as like how the world was designed in The World Ends With You. Thoughts?
Yeah, I got a little frustrated trying to navigate until I realized that for whatever reason the point of view is facing east, and at least compared to the map that they give you, so it got a little easier to figure out where I was going. So I kind of agree with you on that maze aspect, though. I've never been to Japan, but I would definitely like to go and check it out check out Shibuya, for all those reasons. And I also think it's neat that it was this and Tokyo Mirage Sessions, and I never quite confirmed, but I'm still pretty sure at least part of Devil Survivor was in Shibuya. I definitely remember you are locked in a specific block of Tokyo.
Mm-hmm. I have gone to Japan, and it was just like 4 years ago that I went, and even though it had been so many years since I had played The World Ends With You, it was a huge priority for me that I went back and visit Shibuya as part of that trip, even though it wasn't part of the tour itinerary that we were on. And I, of course, made sure to see the most memorable sites that I remembered, the Scramble Crossing. And it really is, like, right next to there, the statue of the dog, blanky on the name, Hachiko.
Hachiko.
Yes. The statue of the dog, which is just, like, that's the meetup in the game. And I was like, I have to go see this. And even in Tokyo Mirage Sessions, like, that's one of the places that's in there. Every game so far I've played that has Shibuya, they have Hachiko, and I think that's really cool. But The World Ends With You definitely has a lot more of Shibuya to explore than a more modern game like Tokyo Mirage Sessions. Like, it's really surprising seeing how much correlation there was. So, for example, replaying this game now, having been to Japan, been to Shibuya, there were locations that I now recognize that had not made an impact when I first played it, but did make an impact this following time, such as Q Tokyo Hands, which in the game is called Shibuku Hands, which I just thought of as just a random store, like everything else when I first played it. But that now I have that like memory of the real location, and it was really cool kind of replaying it just to experience that.
Huh, cool.
Other things, though, the number one love I have for this game, both first time and this time, was the soundtrack. Like, it is a soundtrack that I still have on my iPod today from when I bought it back in 2008, and I still listen to it, and it is so addictively good.
Definitely, yeah, that is definitely my favorite part of the game, was the soundtrack, because every track for running around or for battle or just in the background while they're talking was great.
One of the things that I really loved about it was like one of the main mechanics of how battles work is you can chain them. But it's not like a lot of JRPGs where it's just like one battle soundtrack for that area or something like that. It's every round of a chained battle will sub in a new soundtrack. So even stuff like that just keeps the momentum feeling fresh and each fight feeling a little bit extra unique. Just in that the sound, the tempo, like will be changing as you go through it. It's not like it doesn't become repetitious, and I really appreciate stuff like that. Especially with how like there could be a lot of grinding in this game if you wanted to go for every pin. Like this is definitely a Pokemon style of collect them all and evolve them all as far as how the battle system works. What was something else you liked?
I really, well, it was kind of a love hate with the grinding, and I really liked the way you could adjust your character level to increase your drop rate and the difficulty level, and so I definitely get into a mode with Pokemon, and I did for a little while with The World Ends With You, where I kind of try to over optimize and grind, and that slowed me down a little. But eventually, I got into a groove where I was like, this is a good difficulty level, and I could adjust, my pins and that control completely differently, and it just felt like I once it took me a while to get there, but once I found just the right setup, the right level of difficulty, then it was a lot of fun to play, even running into the same noise over and over to get a specific drop.
Yeah, I've personally found about 6 or 7 levels below my actual level was a good ratio, and then about 3 to 4 chain usually was pretty good.
Yeah, I started off just always setting my level to 1, and
Oh,
eventually
wow.
that was not sustainable after maybe the first week, but around was it like around a drop rate of 25 was I think where I capped it, which is
Yeah.
24 below.
Yeah. That was usually what I was aiming at as far as the combination of the two. And one of the things that I really like about that is that you can make those like incidental grinding battles a little bit more challenging and a little bit more like better drop rate. But then if you just want to get through things, you can bump your level back up to full, you can change the difficulty if needed, but you can just like sort of power through. One of the things that kept me going was the idea of I wanted to complete one day in game, at least every other day in the real world. That way I knew I was always making progress. So having a difficulty system that allowed for that sort of modular like difficulty of what I wanted to experience at that time, I found really nice. Up until the gray shadows show up and they can just go to hell. Especially when I'm trying to get just a 3 or 4 combo chain, and then two of them jump in, and it's like, damn it! Now I have to survive this.
Yeah, there were a few chains where I was just being kind of stubborn because I like I said, I like to maximize my efficiency. And so I would like start a chain of four with two of the ones being like a large enemy that I really wanted the drop from, and then two more just to increase the drop rate, and then I'd play the same chain battle, 4 or 5 times, just restarting each time I died until I finished.
Oh wow. The only time I really had to retry a whole lot was usually a boss battle that I went into without realizing, so I had the wrong like I was constantly switching my pins out for lower leveled so that I was constantly evolving stuff. And then I would run into a boss battle and it's like, well, my pins are not going to carry me through this. So
Right, I
I'd
think.
have to die, exit out, and then I could switch out my deck for the more appropriate set. But
yeah, I ended up setting up my deck how I liked it and just swapped out pins when I got a better version. And
that was how I played it the first time.
Yeah, and then what I did end up doing later on, though, was I just got a bunch of pins that were, like, if I didn't need to buy anything immediately, I put a bunch of pins that were worth a lot of money into my second deck, and I would just switch to that deck before I saved. And later I would load it, those pins would get some experience, and I would switch back to my main deck, and eventually those would kind of level up and be worth more when I wanted to buy something.
The hardest thing for me was the whole, like, you have to actually exit the game or turn off the game in order for that experience to accrue. You can't just leave it and sleep.
Right.
So that took me a while to remember, oh, I have to actually turn the game off and then load the save, which...
Well, just got in the habit of every time I saved, once it finished saving, I would do the LR start select reset and go back to the main screen before I turned off the system, or, well, not turn off, before I closed it and put it away.
One other thing that I really want to mention as a like of this game is how they designed the progression, the walls, the checkpoints, if you will. I really liked that instead of just being a grind fest, like you have to do X before you can proceed, those X's were always something that was in some way teaching the player a mechanic of the game, or maybe getting them to explore the world itself and become better acquainted with it, which definitely helps with finding your way around. So I really liked how they did that usual, like, JRPG trope of this is a wall that you can't get past until later, but in this case they used it to teach you the game, and that went throughout the entire experience, and I really appreciated that.
Yeah, one that was really memorable for me was where you had this guy ask you for a specific pin, and I think I don't remember if he actually told you. Yeah, I think he told you, because they usually do which noise drops the pin.
Yep.
But it was the... And he even told you, like, oh...
What difficulty
it's
setting.
It's the red jellyfish, but you'll... If you don't know how to get them, just wait around with the blue jellyfish. But the trick that took me a while to realize was that you had to set it to easy difficulty to get that pin.
Which I remember also, them mentioning the difficulty if it was specific, but yeah.
I think maybe that was if you go back and talk to him again, because I definitely tried different, because I didn't get it on the normal, so of course my first instinct was, they're trying to challenge me, I have to change it to hard.
Oh.
And that didn't work either.
I remember it as a, maybe I did talk to him again to follow up, but I saw that as a teaching you, hey, you can change the difficulty, and changing the difficulty would give you a different experience, not in just the difficulty itself, but also in what dropped. And yeah, really like that.
Yeah. But I mean, that was also interesting because you have to let the blue jellyfish live for a while to spawn the red ones, which meant that if you weren't trying to get it and you set it to easy, you would probably wipe them out immediately. So it was an interesting challenge to just figure out what specifically you had to do that was not how you'd normally play.
Mm-hmm. And I really liked the noise report, which would tell you for each enemy that you encountered what the drops were for each difficulty and what the drop rate for that item was in that difficulty.
Yes.
So that you could really, like, when you're planning it out and seeing, hey, I need to get, like, if I want a 25% chance of getting this drop, I want to get this sort of star rating or whatever for that battle. So, that kind of visibility on the statistics was really nice, which kind of led into one of the things that I felt was missing, lacking in the game, was why didn't that same sort of, like, explanation and visibility carry over for the actual pins? Which the evolving was such a big thing, and there were three different types of experience points that you could use to evolve them. But once the pin gets mastered, all of the visibility of how you got it there is lost. And I really thought that was a mistake. You don't always have duplicates of the pin ready, like right then and there. So if you get a duplicate later on and you're like, well, I think I used this one mostly for battle, but maybe I didn't. It's like, ah, you gotta take your own notes or something, which I felt kind of went against the rest of how that game worked.
Yeah, that was definitely a weird disconnect between so much visibility on the information for the noise and explaining the requirements for each thing pretty well, and then no explanation for the pins. But before we get into dislikes, I do want to say I really enjoyed all of the characters in the story, like even ones that were kind of, one or two jokes, like the Shoumi Namimoto, like we were joking about before, who's just obsessed with math and throws math terms into his speech even though it doesn't actually make sense. And
Is just constantly leaving piles of trash and calling it art.
yes, just because that was never particularly explained, it's just a thing he does. And for whatever reason, I really enjoyed the like the two kids that were obsessed with tin pin slammers that kept showing up. And when you battled one of them, the very clearly the shonen protagonist kid who with the long scarf, and when you beat him, he was just like, "Wow, that was awesome! We should battle again someday." And
I really, that was one of the nice things about this game taking place in a single location over the span of 3 weeks, is that there were several reoccurring characters through that 3 week period. Some of which even joined you as players in the game. Like they were people you were to interact with in the first week as they were the real people in the real world. But then something happened to them, and then they were players, and they were like, "Oh, hey, I remember you." And I kind of liked stuff like that.
Yeah, so that was another thing I liked, was that after I finished, I went and played through a few of the missions again, because once you beat it, you can go, you get the chapter select, and you have specific missions you can go through to unlock secret reports.
Get
And
all
I,
the piggies.
yes, actually, I had several of the stars already, and all of the ones that I already had were for getting the pig noise.
Same here.
And which of course are, hidden in specific locations and will give you rewards like a rare pin, or sometimes just
Lot of money.
a lot of money. But I didn't realize until I went back to the, 'cause I just went through the first week immediately after I finished, I redid the first week missions, and that was when you are running around following this guy that's trying to get people to wear his red pin, which of course becomes a big plot point later. But at the time, I didn't realize, like, oh, these people are important. When I went back to play that mission again, I was, wait a minute, these two random, Shibuya folks are the players in the following week. I didn't even recognize
Oh,
them the
you
first time
didn't.
around.
Oh, wow.
And also realized that they set up a lot of things, like, in one day you can see this girl talking to a guy and going, "Oh, you really like Tin Pin Slammer? So you would, go if someone had tickets?" And he's like, "Yeah, sure." And then I had forgotten about that before, but the following day there's a whole conflict between her and her friend where she's like, "I saw you talking to him. You know I like him." And like, it was just things that I didn't realize they were set up earlier and paid off later.
And there's the whole being able to I don't remember what they call it, but the like ESP mode or something where you can actually read people's thoughts
The
and around should
scanning.
be yes, scanning. I guess that was a pretty simple word to have suddenly forgotten.
Yeah, well.
But yeah, they're all of the characters in the background have these thought bubbles that are kind of fun to read. They kind of disappear by the end of the game, but
that was interesting too, because it was sort of you're constantly scanning to, well, I guess if at least if you're trying to level up or get pins, you are always stopping to scan and fight the noise.
Yep.
And eventually you sort of, you know, stop reading the people's thoughts because they're there all the time and they don't really affect the story much. But then later on when the thoughts stop showing up all the time, it's actually kind of creepy, which was the intended effect.
Yep. They did quite a bit of cool and unique stuff, even though a lot of it did rely on like standard tropes. But they would twist it enough or do something special with it that really makes this game stand out, even today. Really, I'm surprised there hasn't been any sort of sequel to this style of game, at least to my knowledge.
Yeah. So, moving on to the things we didn't like, there was a really big lull in the middle of the game, and I think that was part of the reason this was delayed. Well, partly because it took me a lot longer to finish than you. I think I was at almost 30 hours when I finished, and you said it was about 13?
About, like, 14:50 or something like that, yeah. It was...
Mm-hmm.
That sounds like I beat it in half the time.
Yeah, which makes sense for a replay.
Yeah.
But the other reason was that around the beginning of Joshua's week, around the middle of the game, it just got really boring and grindy, and part of it was that I, like I said before, I had to sort of adjust the difficulty level to find something that was satisfying without being too difficult that I got stuck, but it was also just sort of the style of the game, of the story, where I really enjoyed the sense of mystery of what's going on in a lot of the story, but a lot of the time they just don't tell you for no reason. They'll throw you into a situation, and at the beginning of the game it's because you lost your memory, and then later they'll just not tell you what happened, even though Neku knows. They'll just wait to do a flashback, you know, half an hour later.
In the first week, there's a really egregious point, in my opinion, where it was done just to mess with the player and make it sound more dramatic, where Neku is convinced by one of the Reapers that he has to kill his partner. So the chapter ends with him lifting up Shiki, looking like he's like doing a Jedi throat crush or something style of thing on her. And then it cuts out, chapter end, and then he wakes up alone in the dark, which is the first time that something like this has happened. And he's all like freaking out, and then it's like, oh hey, wait, I remember now, and does a flashback to how that actually resolved. And it's like, oh, he got stopped and was like reminded, oh, the Reapers can't actually attack the players or anything like that until
right, and then had like an hour-long conversation with Hanakoma, who explained everything.
Well, I remember that even that was then another flashback done later.
Oh, you're right, you're right. And he did the flashback to being interrupted, and then he talks to Shiki, and then they do a flashback to explaining.
So, and the way that they do these flashbacks is that they love to start at the dramatic point. So you see him choking out Shiki, like, three times.
Yes.
And it's same with, like, how Neku dies in week two, where he slowly has these flashbacks of how he died, and each time he flashes back to it, you see a little bit more. But it's like, why don't you just show us, like, twice? Just maybe twice. Why
right.
does it have to happen, like, five times?
I think that was probably another reason I got bored in the middle of week two, was because this whole... Well, for one thing, that was when they sort of switched from having new information and new missions each day to your partner being like, okay, we have to go do this thing, and then you get partway there, and then everything reset. You fight a boss and it resets, and then you do it again. And the other thing was that the big mystery of week two was that flashback of how Neku died, and you just see it over and over again.
It really, and the fact that every time it flashes back, it's done in a way where it purposely looks like you see the full flashback, and you see, so you like the first time is you see Joshua shoot at Neku, and then the second time you see it, you find, or third time or something, like each time they add one extra scene to that, so you then watch it again where Joshua is running up and then shoots at Neku, and except this time, oh, there was someone behind Neku. Oh, okay, then nothing bad happened. And then the next time you flash back to it, you see that, oh, it was Sho, and then Sho shot Neku. And then it's like, oh, wait, no. Sho didn't shoot Neku. That is, it's like, oh, come on. Stop showing Neku get shot and then not shot. And that goes all the way to the end of the game. Like the one of the last scenes of the game is finally that same flashback, but you see how it finally actually resolved.
So that ended up being a point where I just ended up playing other games and didn't really come back to The World Ends With You. Well, I mean, I would like pick it up and play it for maybe half an hour and get tired of it. Each time, and so that was it was just a big lull, and then once I got past that, I enjoyed it more and was, playing it for a few hours at a time again because I was actually having fun.
The one of the things that I want to bring up as kind of a did not like is kind of the whole two screen thing. I feel like if what's how you're supposed to play it is really exemplified with the gray noise, where you need to basically be playing along with the green combo orb,
The puck.
the puck. 'Cause that's really the only way to truly damage the gray noise is if you're holding the puck, then you do your full damage. Otherwise, you do a heavily reduced damage against them. And so at that point, that week two is when it's really drilling home, hey, you should be paying attention to the puck. But it's just really annoying that every week you have to also relearn how that partner works. And the puck only moves when they do a successful combo, and it is so hard sometimes to do combos, in my opinion, with the upper screen. While at the same time trying to keep things difficult where you're actually getting a good drop, while at the same time you have to make sure that Neku doesn't die when he's not in act. It's, I don't know, it's just such a mess of a system that.
So I think that kind of goes back to another one of my dislikes, and what we were talking about before was that there's so much that's not explained, which I very frequently forgot about the sync rate, which it doesn't really explain at all. But
True.
I decided probably two-thirds of the way through. Oh no, I remember now. I decided to look it up when I was stuck fighting Sho because his whole thing is black taboo or the taboo noise,
Yeah, that's what they were
and
called.
he is the taboo noise. And so I wanted to see if I was missing something, and it turns out that the higher your sync rate, the longer you have to pass the puck back and forth. So if you have 0%, then you have to make a combo immediately or you'll lose it. If you have 100%, then if you miss a few combos, it will stick with you and it will still, retain the combo bonus before you knock it back. And so I realized that I had to basically exit out, eat something to raise our sync rate, and then all of a sudden it was way easier because I wasn't losing the puck and that combo was getting much higher.
Yeah. I don't know. I always had a problem with the top screen partner getting them to do a successful combo.
I probably 90% of the time, I would just keep a vague awareness of, well, not even that much. I would just mash left a bunch or mash right a bunch, and if it didn't seem like anything was happening, I would look up at the top screen to see if there were no enemies there. And I also eventually got a pin that is you hold it on Neku, and he surrounds himself with fire, and it will do damage to enemies nearby, but it will also make him immune to damage, even from projectiles.
Oh
And that
man.
was really useful because if I was almost at a now I'm forgetting what they call it, but the combo attack when you the fusion attack
Oh yes.
that you can set up with your partner. If I was almost to that point and I really wanted it to clear out a bunch of enemies, I could just hold the stylus on Neku and he would go into his little fireball and I could look at the top screen for a while and focus on, whatever that partner's thing was that would give me more stars to do a fusion attack.
See, I was constantly using new pins and I never even used that one. I mean, there are so many pins in this game. It
Right.
really is quite surprising, especially since it's all done as far as your like how you use them, it's all done by stylus. And there are some that you can't really like it gets confused very easily.
Yes.
But I would say overall, it is still pretty impressive how well you can control Neku with the stylus and with so many different styles of pins. I think that was overall pretty well done.
Yeah. That's also the another hidden value that I found out about just because I was looking up information on pins is each one has a I guess it's a fan term called efficiency, which is sort of when the pin hits, it won't actually do the amount of damage listed under the damage for that pin. And I think it's just related to like, oh, if this does 6 hits, those 6 hits will pro like a rapid fire pin that does 6 before you have to reload, it will probably each one of those shots will do 1/6 of the actual listed attack. The
Really?
problem there is when you get a combo finisher with the puck, only the last attack will be multiplied. So
Yeah.
you sort of it's like each one has this hidden value that it doesn't really tell you that will greatly affect how efficient it is. So you can't just pick pins that have the highest attack value and assume they'll do more damage. And between that and the shopping around and comparing different stats and abilities, and you don't even know what most of the abilities are unless you buy a bunch of things from that one shop.
Yep.
It was just like efficiency, min-maxing overload, and that was another part of getting back into the groove in the second half of the game was deciding I just didn't care about finding exactly the right gear or which pins were most efficient. I just found pins that worked for me and swapped them out when I found a better version. And I did find a couple of good pieces of clothing that I stuck with. And every time I saw something in a shop that said, "Oh, this gives this character extra fusion stars," I grabbed that. And
Yes.
other than that, I stopped worrying about it and enjoyed the game more.
And you didn't even mention the whole branding. Like, brands are a big
Yes.
thing, and the popularity of the brands in the different areas will affect, like, on top of that, just how effective those pins are.
Yes.
So, yeah, like, there's a lot going on in this game that very little is like 100% explained, but it's usually referenced enough that it's like, hey, pay attention to this sort of dialogue, but
Yeah, I had actually forgotten that I could change the trends.
Yeah.
So since I used the pretty much the same gear and the same pins the for almost the entire game, when I looked at the map at the end game, I realized I don't even remember which brand it was, but there was one brand that dominated half the map because
Awesome.
I was just battling with that same set everywhere.
I was always changing up what pins I was using. I that the playing it a second time, I remembered a lot of these concepts going into it, and I was able to plan out a lot of it a lot better this time. The first time through, I had probably the same experience you did, where I tried for a little while and then gave up. And I took a picture when I first I hadn't played this game since like 2009. And I took a quick picture of what my gear was before I deleted that save file, because you can only have the one save file, sadly. But yeah, I had to delete my old save file, and I took a picture and I compared that afterwards. And my clothing was so much better this time around. And all I can think is that it's because I understood it a little bit better from the get-go this time.
I think I tend to do this a lot where there's this and Pokemon and some other games where there's kind of a deep subsystem that's mostly for people who finish the game and are going through collecting everything,
Yep.
or in the case of Pokemon are doing, competitive battling, and I know I'm probably not going to replay the game, so I try to get into that, and it's really not necessary for the first playthrough, and I sometimes end up burning out. Sometimes I just realize that I need to give up on that and finish the game and, see more of the story before I burn out.
So I think the last thing we both disliked had to do with boss fights. Do you want to start out?
Yeah, it was the fact that when you are fighting, every time you die, it gives you a few options to just replay, restart on easy, escape so that you can,
But that's not available in any boss fight.
right, escapes that you can like adjust your stuff without reloading or just quit to the start menu and reload. But like you said, you can't escape during a boss fight, so if you realize that you have the wrong deck, or you just, don't have the, you want to adjust your difficulty since you can adjust that in a few different ways, you have to quit and then reload, and then you can adjust your layout, and then you have to go through the entire cutscene before the boss again,
Yep.
which was what I had to do with Shou Minamimoto, which was part of why I ended up looking up, what strategy am I missing here, and how I found out about the sync rate was because every time I tried to adjust my difficulty, aside from just going straight to easy, I had to quit and do that all over again and try again.
So my What I really ended up disliking about the boss fights were the boss fights that had multi-parts to them. Specifically, like having multiple forms in JRPGs for boss fights, super standard. But having moments where you exit out of the boss fight, have dialogue, get your experience from that fight, and then go into another fight directly after that. That's where I had problems. So like the ones that really annoyed me were the fight against I think it was near the end of or maybe I don't damn it but it was Koki and Uzuki. They have a team up fight at one point where your first fight is against Koki, you beat him, and then he's like going to give you stuff, but Uzuki comes in at the last minute going, "What the hell are you doing? Stop being so lazy." But so you had to fight him. You got boss level experience for beating him, which then would cause one of my pins to evolve. And so then that pin will act differently. Like maybe it does things differently, or maybe I have to interact with it a little differently, or maybe I can't use it as many times. And then I have to go into a harder battle after that with this different deck that I didn't choose going in, and have to kind of learn while fighting, and I just really disliked that. There shouldn't be. I mean, it's nice that you're healed back up, but I really just dislike the fact that my pins could change between these multi-part battles. And the worst one was against the final boss, Megumi, who you my healing pin actually changed on me on that fight, where I went from being able to heal myself 3 times during the fight, down to 1 for his final form. And
That
so
sucks.
I have this final boss fight against the multiple head demons where it's basically impossible to avoid all that damage. And it was just this, I didn't want to do the earlier fights and go through the cutscenes in order to like reload and change my pin out to one that was already mastered. I'd already made it to this final form, this final fight, but I just had this single heal now for just 50% of my health, and I had to figure out a way of, okay, I have to make it at least this far, then I can heal, and then I have to get through the rest of it. Like, I have to maximize how much I can make it through, and it took me several tries, but I did finally beat the game, and I was like, yes, but it was a really frustrating moment when I saw my heal pin evolve and go from a 3 heal to a 1 heal, and it's like, damn it.
So that was one fight that I was really glad that I had that the fire pin, because
Oh yeah, I'm sure.
you could there were all of those heads were clustered together. I spent most of the fight actually right up, like between the top one and one of the side ones. I would just attack and attack and attack, and then while the rest of my pins were rebooting, I would switch on the fire pin, and it would just hurt two or three of them by virtue of being near me and attacking me.
So one of the annoying things about that fight is that every now and then, like a green bubble will come over and catch you, and then if you're not able to do enough damage to the bubble, the bubble will carry you up to the center head, which will do a massive attack, a bite attack on you, and take like 40% of your health or some crazy shit like that. And at the very beginning, you're like, the way that entire fight works is you have to like build up your puck, your combo power, so that you're actually doing decent damage against it. But yeah, like that was the hardest part of the battle, was I had to avoid or save up my pins so that I could break that bubble in time. Once I got past that point, it was just a matter of I have to deal enough damage before I die. But I should have had something like that, fire shield. I don't know why I never even used that
Well,
pin.
it also had a really long time of like a couple of seconds. You had to hold it down on Neku where he's not doing anything before it starts. So sometimes I just didn't even get the shield up. When it would grab me, I would try to do that, but sometimes I didn't get the shield up fast enough before he attacked me. And one of the main reasons, or one of the main places that I used it offensively, was those the kangaroos
Oh
that
yeah,
would jump
sure.
up and fall down on you, and
Or
it
maybe the
was
sharks. I hate the sharks.
there. I didn't really fight the sharks that many times, but I mostly just avoided them. I think the sharks were too fast to bring up the shield before, at least once you saw where it was going to appear, and so but the kangaroos, it was like a very short window between realizing that one of them had jumped and being able to bring up the shield. So it was useful in specific situations, but it was not like an instant block.
For the kangaroos, I always just dashed out of the way, like, 'cause you get this very visible like target underneath Neku, and it's like, oh, time to move. No, one of the things, so like I was really impressed with how different a lot of the noise would act. So like the sharks, for example, would eat other noise and become faster and stronger,
Oh, I
which
didn't
I
even
thought
notice
was pretty
that.
cool. Like, and it would change color. Like, it would often be with jellyfish. The shark and the jellyfish would often be in the same like noise. And so the jellyfish don't move around, and the shark will eat the jellyfish, and then we'll just get darker shades of red as it becomes more powerful and faster. And I was like, so it was always a priority of kill the other noise before the shark eats them, then fight the shark. But I thought that was really cool. Like each of the noise would act that differently. The penguins would slide around, the frogs would just have a lot of like tadpoles and stuff. Like it was really cool how each noise was pretty unique, in how you would want to approach them. Another thing that I wanted to say as a like a moment that really made me feel special was the fact that, again, I took a picture of the my previous playthrough and I saw that I had only ever gotten 4 pin slots. And so when I got my 5th pin slot in this go round, I was just super ecstatic about that. And I definitely put that into our notes for my like feelings of greatness on this game, like right away. It was like, yes, I got
Right. And you
it.
also posted about that on Facebook, which immediately made me go, oh, if you never even got the 5th pin slot on your first playthrough, then I'm probably gonna miss it. I'll just look up where it is because I really want more pins.
Yeah.
So I cheated.
It really is useful having more pins.
I mean, in addition to having that fire shield that I only used in really specific situations, I also, because I had an extra slot, I was able to add in a, so I think Supply Plus or something like that, that gives you more uses on limited pins. So I actually
Yeah.
had a healing pin with 6 uses.
Nice.
And there were many fights where I used all of them.
Oh wow. I
Well, at least the bosses.
Yeah. I usually was pretty good. I was always like I really liked the fact that when you leveled up, you would heal to full from that. I always had some sort of clothing that would give some sort of like regeneration effect. So like my health was never dropping that fast to begin with, but I would need some sort of heal for most boss fights. Oh, and also like the combo attack, the special combo attack with your partners would heal a little bit. Like there's always so many ways to get a little bit of health back that I went most of the game without heal pins, but I yeah, most boss fights required at least something. But yeah.
Yeah,
Any other noteworthy moments?
I didn't have any, or I didn't have a lot of like really specific wow, that was amazing moments. But one thing that I just liked in the beginning and missed after I got past the first week was there was one of the fight songs that every time I think it usually came up like on the second or third chain reduction, but it would always start with a little do 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 do, and I swear Shiki's doll was dancing in time with that song every time.
I never noticed that. I'll have to try and look that up. So then I guess we're at final thoughts. What did you think of this game, your first playthrough, David?
So I can see why it's so highly praised, especially like the style of the characters and the music, but like I said before, I really got bored halfway through, and it took me a while to get over that hump, and I think I did end up really enjoying it. I'm glad I got to the end, but if I hadn't been trying to finish it for this podcast, I'm not sure if I would have enjoyed it more because I could just, mess around and get into like getting some of those cool quest items from the shops where you have to get a specific thing, or if I hadn't been trying to finish it for the podcast, I would have just burned out and stopped instead of picking it back up again. I will, however, definitely buy the soundtrack and probably even a pin because I like pins on my bags. And
And
I'm sure that if even if it's not official, I could find any pin I wanted on Etsy or
oh,
eBay or something.
I'm sure most of the pins are on Etsy or eBay. Definitely the player pin. Like, if that does not
Yes.
exist in an official manner, I would be surprised. So my thoughts on the game, like, this was a replay, and I realized that I really had no desire to go back, even though I had fond memories and I remember loving this game that first time through. There was some part of me that just had no desire to go back and relive that. Kind of like the Dot Hack games, where I remember I loved them, but at the same time, I realized that I will probably never replay them for multiple reasons. So, and I didn't remember exactly why I didn't want to replay this one, but I had that feeling of, there was something about it, and now I've sort of remembered that it's the story is a mess. Like, that whole flashback, and we're not going to reveal what really happened until later. And I mean, the characters are a lot of fun, especially Neku and Shiki. Like, they are a fantastic way to start this game. Joshua just, I the entire time, all I can think of is Karu from Neon Genesis. Just that like he knows too much and is way too close to the main protagonist for that to be a like realistic relationship. Like, he even says that he's been watching Neku, which is kind of creepy, and it. I don't think Neku really responds appropriately to stuff like that. But like Beat and Rhyme are fantastic characters. Except for the whole like Rhyme falling into more of Tetsuya Nomura's trope of a female character getting killed off, and it's up to the main character to save her, kind of like Shiki ends up doing as well. Like, he kind of relies on that trope a little too much, but like it is a really fun cast. Even the Reapers, Uzuki and Koki, are great. The bosses that you fight, like Sho, I mean, super memorable, and just fun to interact with on top of fighting. So yeah, I remember and I love all of that stuff, but the story itself is not good
And
in
it
the
also
end.
does the thing where it sets up this one mystery of, who the composer is and how Neku died. And at the end, it's like, here you go. Here's the answer to this specific question that we kept asking. We're not going to explain the rest of the plot unless you complete all of these missions and read a bunch of secret reports, but
Yeah.
hopefully you didn't care about anything else.
But yeah, I mean, it sounded like overall we enjoyed the game, but it has problems.
Yes.
Yeah. So yeah, that was The World Ends With You. We both played it on the DS. There is an iOS version. Try that out. I've heard it's good. I hear it like it doesn't. It's a single player where you don't have the dual screen thing. You'll just have like Shiki or your partner on the same screen with you, and I don't know. It sounds like a weird little change, but it's probably for the better as far as being able to control everything on a single screen.
Yeah, I before I played it, I wasn't really sure how that would work because I just vaguely knew how the battle system worked in the original game. But now that I've played it, I can see how that would work since, like I said, a lot of the time I was just pressing
Yeah.
one direction over and over while I paid attention to the touch screen.
And that would work unless the like some boss fights would require you to be a bit more specific than that. But so yeah, that was The World Ends With You. Next month, well, this month, because we're recording late, the plan is the 2011 first-person shooter Bulletstorm, which I don't think either of us have played. So that'll be
Nope.
fun. And it's definitely a harsh contrast to such a very Japanese game.
Yes. Yes.
So please join us next month for Bulletstorm. Hopefully we'll be able to record and post on time, planning for March 26th, which is only 3 weeks away.
Right, assuming I don't get really obsessed with maximizing death combos and burnout on Bulletstorm.
So yeah, that was our show. Have a good one.
The power is yet unknown. 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 Like, show me your glass of crystal blister. It's so weaponized like a gang. You said you need more candy cane. Okay, cold, the freak's got a high kick, mister. Twister, moist with the worst. Don't stick it up, take it up, step aside. I said I will back, step back, take a bow to the middle. Brainwave man, it's like a good a high kick, relax. So like, show me your best at crystal blister. It's so weaponized like a gang. You said you need more candy cane. Okay, cold, the freak's got a high kick, mister. Twister, moist with the worst. Don't stick it up, take it up, step aside. I said I will back, step back, take a bow to the middle. Back, take a bow to the man, a bow to the man, a bow to the man, a bow to the man.
And I just want to tease David a little bit in the after show that I have a conspiracy theory that he wanted to delay the episode long enough so that he could talk about the Switch. Do you want to talk about the Switch?
I do want to talk about the Switch.
I figured.
It was just a serendipitous coincidence.
So,
But
you got the Switch yesterday. Tell us
yes.
about your first experiences.
So it's actually smaller than I expected. Despite seeing a bunch of previews and, watching commercials with people playing it, I didn't quite like I expected it to be about like on the larger end of tablet sized or maybe comparable to the Wii U gamepad.
I always
But
thought
it's
that the screen was about the same size, but the rest of it was just more compact, more thin.
No,
Is
I'd
that about
say
right, or?
it's maybe I would have to look at them next to each other to compare, but I think the width may be around the same,
With the
but the
Joy-Cons on
height
it?
is yeah, with the Joy-Cons on it, but the height it's much narrower in height than the gamepad, much
And
more
thickness.
Landscape.
Yeah,
Yeah,
okay.
and in thickness. It's much thinner, and I'd say it's more in the range of like a the size feels more like a one of the smaller Kindles than a large tablet.
Yeah, that makes sense.
But I'm also very I'm one of the people that I've seen several others mention this online that I'm very amused and happy that when you click the Joy-Cons into the console and it's on, it will actually play that click sound from the commercials through the
Yeah.
speakers.
Nice.
And the interface is pretty bare, and I was really surprised that you can't even get a play log like you can on the 3DS and the Wii U. Unless you set up a smartphone app with parental controls to report that. And it didn't even occur to me that the main reason for the play log was for parents to monitor what their kids are playing, but it's still really weird that, I mean, I just like having that so I can see how long a specific game took.
I
And
agree. And that's one of the things that I've really been missing when playing PlayStation 4 games, is that I don't think any of the PlayStation 4 games I've played so far give a time as far as how long you've been playing that game. Which I
yeah,
know
me
most
either.
PS3 games it would be in the like save file, but I haven't seen that for PlayStation 4. Maybe it's a like a change in this generation, just developers don't care about that now.
Maybe. And so to get that on the Switch, you have to set up a smartphone app for parental controls and get a report, which is mostly worrying because it seems like that may be a trend for the Switch, because they're talking about to manage your you know, invites to games and friends and do voice chat, you'll have to actually use a smartphone app, which I didn't think that they would really require that. Like, maybe that would be an option, but I didn't think they would really require that until I realized that's required for the parental controls.
When the Switch was announced, and or the features for the Switch were announced January, I think it was, they told us that there would be an app for the voice. And when they said an app, and this is a tablet device, I was thinking, oh, you mean like inside the tablet you have to go to a different app within there, a different square or whatever, to go into and activate the voice chat. But it wasn't until much later that someone pointed out to me that, no, they mean you have to download an iOS or an Android smartphone app in order to use that functionality. At which point, I'm just like blown away by the fact that in order to fully use this Nintendo device, you need to have a smartphone. And that's ridiculous to me. I don't understand that at all.
That's why, like I said, I was pretty sure that, like, no, that can't be the only way to do it. Maybe they will, you know, also have that app, like the, you know, there's a PlayStation app that you can use to do messaging and, you know, you can, like, connect your account to another PlayStation. So that maybe that'll be another option, but now that I've seen how the parental controls work, I'm worried they may actually require a smartphone to do basic online functionality. But on the bright side, the only game that I am pretty sure I'm going to want to play online will be Splatoon, and they basically said that Splatoon will come out in the summer, and the paid features for the online on the Switch will not come out into the fall, and so the online play will be free for at least some period when Splatoon 2 comes out. So
yeah, and even after that, it's not going to be that expensive, like half the price of the other consoles.
Right. So I was optimistic about the online features being a lot better than people expected, and I'm no longer optimistic about that. But the console itself, I like. It's actually just kind of fun to click and unclick the Joy-Cons, although the little the straps that sort of make them a little bit thicker and make the side buttons more usable are for just the Joy-Cons separately. Those are weirdly hard to get off once they're on. Other than that, it's been pretty easy.
The other things that I kind of haven't seen anyone post, so I have a direct question about, is there a sleep mode, and how does that work?
Yes, there is a sleep mode, and you can either hold the home button and go to sleep mode, or hit the power button on top of the system will go to sleep mode, and you have the option to either wake up as soon as the home button is pressed, or to have a sort of lock screen where it will wake up and wait for you to press the same button 3 times. So that's sort of a, you know, buffer against the home button being pressed accidentally.
Okay, that's decent. So I'm sure you're getting, you already got Zelda, and you'll be getting Splatoon and probably Mario Odyssey, but are there any other games that are part of that initial launch library that you're planning to pick up?
So I'm kind of torn on Shovel Knight, because I already have Shovel Knight on the 3DS, and I will eventually get the new campaign that they released on the Switch, but I can basically either wait a month and get it on the 3DS for free, since I already bought it, or for $10 get it on the Switch. And I'm probably not going to get it on the Switch, but I've been thinking about that. The Has Been Heroes that comes out later this month looked interesting, and I would also really like to play Snipperclips, but that's a totally co-op game. There are a lot of games that look interesting, but they're just more expensive than I would play for what I'm looking to get out of it.
Sure.
Like, ARMS looks kind of weird and interesting, but I wouldn't want to pay full price. Maybe it's worth the full price, but I'm not really a fighting game guy, and it also doesn't really look like it has as much depth as, a full fighting game. And of course, everybody has been saying that the 1-2 Switch
Should
party
have been a
game,
tech demo.
well,
Like,
yeah,
that should have been included.
it should have been a pack-in,
Yeah.
or at the very least, like, I mean, even when they released the whatever that Wii U amusement park themed party game was, that was only $20 because it was previously a pack-in, but 1-2 Switch is $50, and even Bomberman R, which I looked at and I thought this would be another thing that'd be great to just download in case I bring my Switch somewhere else, and it'd be great to have a multiplayer game, but that Super Bomberman R is the name of it. That's also $50, which is just maybe it does have a great, one player campaign mode or whatever, but that's not why I would want to buy it. So just the $50 for I'll put this on my console and maybe I'll play it if I bring it to other people is out of that price range. Although on that note, I saw that my favorite game to try to convince other people to play, Towerfall, will eventually be on the Switch.
Oh, nice. I remember you even brought that on your Surface tablet once for all of us
Yeah.
to play. And that's really like the best argument I've heard for the Switch so far was the whole idea of going to conventions and being able to just pull out this video game system and instantly network around with other people with it. Like you can just find a corner of the exhibit hall and just be playing Splatoon or Towerfall or something like that with other people right then and there. Like it's what the DS already does, but in a more like it's a larger experience method. And there are still rumors going around that Pokemon Stars is going to be announced for the Switch and stuff like that, where it really everything I hear about the Switch tells me that Nintendo should be dropping the 3DS line and just putting all of their focus on the Switch, as like their mobile games are totally at home on this system, while also being able to do those console experiences like Zelda and Mario on it. And I haven't really comprehended why they're saying that they're going to continue to support the 3DS, but I guess at the same time, did they ever say they were dropping the Wii U or the Game Boy for that matter? I'm pretty sure you
Oh
could find
no. They
somewhere
were
saying that the Game Boy is still a like third tier or something like
the third
that.
pillar was the
Yeah,
term that people brought up a
three
lot,
third
the three
pillar.
pillars.
I mean, I don't know. Maybe they'll do that.
Yeah.
Maybe it'll be a Game Boy and the Switch. I don't know, but
But I mean it's also it's not something that you can slip in your pocket and just take with you all the time either.
it's true.
It's something that you'd have, in a bag. And that's also one of the reasons the main reason I got the collector's edition instead of the regular edition of Breath of the Wild was that it came with a hard case to carry it in.
The
And
so I mean, what's your next game after Zelda? Splatoon? Is that like what you're planning on right now?
Well, I know that Has-Been Heroes will come out before then. Oh yeah, Blaster Master Zero actually looks interesting. My older brother sent me a message about that and was talking about how much he remembers the original Blaster Master on the NES and how hard it was, and I don't remember that at all, but the new one looks interesting. I mean, there's just a lot of smaller indie games that look like they'll be will be fun between now and Splatoon.
Cool. I mean, I hope you get good use out of the system. I know for where my gaming habits are right now that I wouldn't get the use out of it that I'd want. I'm still way too into my PlayStation 4 that I feel like I just bought to even float around the idea of buying a Switch. The one that I'm having a hard time with right now is just there's so much hype around both Horizon Zero Dawn and Zelda that I want to buy both of those and play them, even though I know I don't have the time at all to play either of those games before Persona 5 comes out, which is, and that's the same, like, Final Fantasy 15 is on sale this weekend, and it's like, ooh, I want that game, but I know I'm not going to play it before I've got a even more, like, I've been looking forward to Persona 5 for years now, and yeah, at this point, Persona 5 is my next purchase. Once I'm past that, I can, like, reevaluate and see, okay, now is the time for Zelda or something like that. But right now I'm kind of stuck in the, I have so many games that I want to play that I already own and have not yet that I can't talk myself into buying, even though I am super hyped that so many people are saying they love Zelda. And it's like, oh, I want to experience that love along with you guys, but I just can't bring myself to spend the money on a game I don't have the time for at the moment.
Yeah, it's funny because that the fact that I have several games on the Wii U that I still haven't played but really want to was part of my justification for getting the Switch, was that, you know, even though a lot of people don't consider the Wii U to be a success, I had enough games that I'm still playing them, so even if the Switch is not a huge runaway success like the Wii was, I'm confident that I'll get enough games on it that I'll be happy with my purchase.
See, I am still, like, I was of the opinion that a PC and Wii U were the, like, at the bare minimum, that was the best way to approach the current generation. Was because Nintendo games are only ever on Nintendo games, and those experiences are very unique. Like, you can't really do those experiences elsewhere. But most PS4 games and pretty much all Xbox games are now on PC. And so with a PC and the Wii U, you had most of the video game market at your, like, leisure. And I loved my Wii U, and to see it get treated this way by Nintendo, that calling it a failure and distancing themselves from it so rapidly, it really soured me on that, on just Nintendo in general, like the way that they treated this. I don't know. I personally don't think the Switch is going to do any better than the Wii U did. So, I mean, it would be great if it did better, but I just don't see it happening. The market has changed too much for that to happen, especially for a system that has such a small library. I don't know.
Oh, also, you know, speaking of other systems, you know, my next game aside from the Switch after Breath of the Wild is going to be Nier Automata, which I pre-ordered on the PS4.
And I will totally be borrowing from you at some point in the future. You've never actually played the first Nier, right?
No, nor the Drakengard series, which I've heard it's a spinoff of.
Like, both of those, I've almost bought Nier a couple of times, but it was one of those things of both that and Drakengard are a series that I want to play, but I don't want to spend the money to play, if that makes sense. Like, I've heard they are not good games, but they are fantastic. Like, it's like that you want to play them, but you're going to have a like a mixed feeling of like mostly good, but there's huge faults with them, and I don't know. I just like ah, I want to try, but I don't. I can't convince myself to hunt down a copy and spend like Drakengard 3 last time I looked was like $25 to $30, and I just.
Yeah, I almost bought Drakengard 3 a couple times when it was on sale for like, I think I saw it on, maybe it was pre-owned at Best Buy for $18 or $20, and I almost
Oh,
bought it
that would
based
have
on,
been better than I've seen,
yeah.
but yeah.
But it was based on, you know, a lot of people talking about how great it is and how like weird and terrible but endearing the characters are.
Yeah, like it is that super over the top cheesy Japanese that does not go well with most people, but I know I would probably love it. It's just
Yes, me too.
I don't know. It's like I want to, but maybe I will eventually. I know I will eventually. And it's great to hear that you're getting Automata because I played that demo and it was great. So.
Yeah, that was the main thing that convinced me to pre-order it was the playing the demo.
Okay. Anything else? I think this has been a fun podcast.
Yeah, and I think we were both a little worried that I wouldn't actually finish the Borderlands with you and we might have to skip this month, and I'm really glad that we didn't because I enjoyed it a lot and I don't want to, you know, just skip a whole month on our podcast, so
Yeah, and
this was fun.
Bulletstorm should be a much like shorter and easier experience to
Yes.
get through, even though we have less time to do it this month. And then yeah, I don't even know, between I was surprised that you agreed to it. With how much hype is on Zelda right now, I would have thought you'd want to do that 100%. And I know I'm so hyped on Persona that I don't know if I'll be joining you for something that month. I'm sorry. I just really want it. Okay. Bye.
Bye.